Hey there, gang. Patrick King here, and I want to thank you for tuning in for episode number 15 of Talking About Horses. In these broadcasts, I try to bring you some of the best riders, horsemen, trainers, equine advocates, and thought leaders in the horse industry for tips, insights, and stories. You can listen at home, at work, in the car, or even in the saddle, either through Facebook, YouTube, or by downloading the podcast direct from the iTunes store. Today, I'm pleased to be joined here by my good friends, Michael and Julia Lyons. Michael made the decision to dedicate his life to learning the ways of horsemanship after working and seeing the impact his family made on the equine industry. Since leaving home and moving to Tennessee, Michael spent many hours in training with his father, John Lyons, and brother, Josh Lyons, so that he could be in a position to help others reach their horsemanship goals. Michael is also an equine massage practitioner and enjoys incorporating equine massage into his training program. With a solid foundation under his belt, Michael now resides in North Carolina with his wife, Julia Lyons, training horses and their owners locally, as well as traveling to other locations nationwide. Michael and Julia, thank you both so much for joining me for this broadcast.
Good to be here, buddy.
Yes.
That's awesome. Well, you know, Michael, we need to get a little more of a bio on your website for Julia now.
I know. That's what I was just going to say. I told her we got to update it. He actually just now, about 3-4 weeks ago, just got certified in the massage as well. So.
Did she really? Fantastic. Good.
So, yeah, that's we're kind of getting a little bit different bio going than we started out with.
It's ever evolving.
It's every what?
It's ever evolving.
Oh, ever evolving. Yeah. Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth? And that's kind of an awesome way, I think, to start our little conversation here about the ever evolving. I love that you guys are interested in the massage and you've got the certifications in that, and it seems like you're constantly working on yourselves and your horsemanship also. I want to get into a little bit of that, but first, you know, Michael, since you don't have that bio on your website for Julia, Julia, why don't you give us a little bit of information on your background and your experience with horses?
Okay, it started, I've been riding since I was about 4 years old. I kind of pick on the fact that I scared my mother to death by taking off running after a horse that was actually riding down the road. And I took off running towards the road at 4 years old, scared her to death, and the rest is history. I pretty much taught the lady riding, talked her into giving me riding lessons, and started there with just playing on horses, learning how to enjoy and have fun with them. And then it was, you know, in my early teenage years that I started to realize that there was a little bit more to these horses and to the training and how we needed to train. At that stage, I was actually riding in dressage and doing lower level eventing and helping a lady, a really great trainer in the Pinehurst area, with her horses. And just kind of decided that I wanted to venture out, and that's when I started seeking trainers and seeking all kinds of different advice, and went to the World Equestrian Games in 2010. And it's actually where I ended up meeting Michael.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I was doing my first solo demo up there. My dad had tricked me into doing it, and I actually pulled Julia out of the crowd to come into the arena with me, so it was pretty fun. And then, you know, from there, just kind of, you know, history was made.
That was your ploy to get a phone number? Is that what that was?
You know how it goes. You got to be crafty these days.
Well, however that worked, however you planned that out, it worked, right? Well, no, I think it's worked out great for both of you, and I understand that you've just recently celebrated your second year of marriage. Is that correct?
First year.
Okay, first year.
Yeah.
Well, working on the second year at least, right? That's awesome.
Yeah.
We've officially started.
Yeah.
You've officially started. There you go. So the honeymoon is over, and now she's beating you up on a regular basis, right, Michael?
Absolutely not.
Good. Atta girl. Oh, goodness. So let's talk a little bit about kind of this idea of always evolving and always learning more and bettering ourselves within the horse industry. So, Michael, when did you decide for the equine massage?
What was it, 3 years ago? Or 4 years ago, I wanted to do it because we had a guy, the guy that certified me, he's out of Janesville, Wisconsin, and he really kind of opened up my thought process to it because he was talking to me about it, and I was having trouble doing some maneuver, and he was talking about, you know, how the muscles worked, and I thought that was just a phenomenal idea to implement knowing how the body works to my training.
Yeah.
And, you know, that really kind of opened my eyes, because a lot of times I find, you know, we want more all the time, and doing something to help my horse give me more makes it better for everybody. You know, it just makes it easier on the both of us, and it's a great reward for my horse at the end of the day, and it's a lot of preventative care, so I don't run into as many injuries. So always, you know, trying to learn how to do this stuff better is really key for both Julie and I. You know, we are always trying to push ourselves and figure out what, you know, what we like to do. We want to kind of dabble in a little bit of everything. So that was kind of my main turning point, was really to increase, you know, the kind of maximize my training for my horse and make sure that they were in, you know, good body and spirit to do it, you know, kind of that whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And it does, it adds a whole new element to, our horsemanship, to our training program, to even, I think, the way that we look at the ideas that we have and the requests that we make of the horse, I think, change when we know more about things like that.
Absolutely. You know, it really opens your eyes up to each maneuver, you know, and the balance and everything like that. You're like, okay, you can start targeting specific muscles and saying, this is what I need to build, or this is what I need to, you know, maintain a little bit better or something like that. And it actually just kind of helps you out in the long run. It doesn't so much change so much your training, but it changes how you think about your training and how you go about preparing your horse for things and doing things like that.
Right, right. That's awesome. So, Julia, what spurred you to go through with the certification also?
Michael, so when he first moved to North Carolina, he was doing a lot of massage. And then the more we grew, we started doing the facility, things kind of started changing. And to get him to do a massage and do a clinic, because a lot of times we'd go to clinics and we have these horses that were having training issues, or what they thought was training issues. And it wasn't a training issue at all. It was more of a soreness or muscular, you know, that physical issue.
Right.
And he was getting asked all the time to do massages after the clinics or during a lesson or anything like that. And it was getting to ask a lot. Like, I was sitting kind of in the background thinking that this is something I could be doing while he's teaching the clinic, or pulling people aside, working beforehand, so the pressure's not all on him. Mm-hmm. So they focus on the horsemanship side, which is what he's so good at. And so he kind of started wanting to take a step back from that and wanted basically help. And so that's where I decided to step in. It was the hard part for me before, because I've been wanting to do it for several years, was finding the time to leave our property and go and do it. But now that we have the facility, it was easy, because all I had to do was bring him to our place, and we could still work our horses and do everything here. And so I'm doing that course. I've got another course that's coming in January that takes it even further. And then I'm hoping to do one more master's course in massage to kind of keep going with it and seeing where I can go.
That's fantastic. That's awesome. But you know, I don't understand this point where you're trying to say that Michael just can't handle it all by himself. No, I totally get it. I totally get it. That's very cool. And like you said, it's a great way for you to be able to help out on the side, you know, on kind of on the sidelines there when you see issues that are coming up or challenges that are being had, so that Michael can focus on the horsemanship side of things. I think that's fantastic. And on the horsemanship side of things, if I remember right, Julia, you've got a little bit more even than the eventing and the dressage that you talked about. You did some trick riding too, didn't you?
Yeah, I tried my hand at it, and if I had it my way, I'd still be doing it. But like we said, we're ever evolving, and I still think that maybe at some point in time I'll get back to it as far as that goes. But I had to take a step back a couple years ago when I lost my main horse. And it's been 3 years ago. Basically, when I lost her, I stopped trick riding and kept thinking that I would get another horse. And really, we spent so much time in the training world and teaching other people and teaching everybody else that I haven't really had the time to develop my own horse with the right size, the right stamina to do that. So I actually just recently, finally, I think, let go of it a couple months ago, sold my saddle so somebody could use it, and hopefully in the next couple years, maybe, something will arise and I'll be able to get back into it a little bit.
Yeah. Well, and, I totally get what you mean about not having a whole lot of time for, getting back and training a horse of your own. I think that's something that people oftentimes can misunderstand, is because you guys are in the business of training horses, that you must have lots of time to ride your own horses. But the reality is very different. You spend all day long riding other people's horses. It can be very challenging to develop your own.
Absolutely. And then too, it's also, developing the time for your horse. Also with your trip riding, it's very, you're very devoted to what you're doing. So you've got to be practicing day in and day out, working, building your muscle, get your core strength and everything back. And so I would like to think that at some point, I don't really want to do necessarily trip riding. I would like to get to where I was doing maybe like flag ceremonies, but I think that's years down the road. I want to focus more on the horsemanship and building that right now.
Gotcha. So do you have any horses of your own right now, Julia, that you're developing?
I have one that is just recently became mine, and then one other that's kind of mine, kind of still a boarding horse that I'm knocking a little rust off of as far as a Friesian, and then Michael has one. So we went from having one horse to just recently we've got three now. So, but both of them, all three need a little bit of work. Michael's very little, but so we're finally starting to get the right horses developing in our program.
Good. So Michael, I don't want you to feel like we're leaving you alone right there, with Julia and I chatting. But so tell me, Michael, about your horse that you're working on developing. Is this a reiner? I know you've got quite an interest in the reining, right?
Yeah, I have actually a background in showing and everything like that. That's kind of what I started in. That's my old brother Josh is pretty committed to doing it. And that's where I started learning. So I do implementing a lot of the training into my program because I feel like it just develops a really, really solid, very well-controlled horse, and being able to handle, everything at that degree of speed is really, really important. The little horse I got right now is he's 13 this year. He's got a lot of the different tricks. He's got a lot of feel to him. He's a real good little horse. And I mean, when I say little, he's a little guy. He's a little cutting horse. So.
Oh, okay.
I always get picked on because he's about as round as he is tall right now. So.
you're riding the Shetland pony, right?
Yeah, that's it. That's the way. I can't get on them tall horses, so. He does really good. He's my main demo horse. I take him to a lot of the shows and get him working and everything like that. I'm gonna start looking here soon for a next demo horse, because I want to start getting him to where he's a little bit more as a backup. Because not that he's time I get my next one finished, he will start to be on the time where I'm wanting to get him retired and, you know, eventually putting our kid on him, you know, when that day comes. So,
when that day comes. I like how you changed that from what sounded like a potential announcement and you kind of changed that up. Goodness. We'll have to do that. When that day does come, we'll have to do a broadcast for that. You know, that would be a way to announce that, wouldn't it? Goodness. So your personal horses as demo horses, is that something that you try to do as often as possible? Is that something that's new for you? But tell me a little bit about that, and how do you find time to work with them?
That's kind of the million-dollar question right there, is finding the time. Really, he was a horse that I had been training off and on for about 6 years, and I really knew him well, and I liked how he was and everything like that. And just recently, I got the opportunity to get him, and I jumped all over it because I had already done all this work on him, and then ended up, you know, being able to end up with him, which was a phenomenal deal for me. And he really, really is just a nice little horse. He's got, you know, a lot of the different tricks on him, and he's got a lot of body control. And I used him in a lot of my clinics as well as, like, a demonstration horse. And then also he's there, you know, if somebody's having trouble feeling a particular maneuver, I put him on him, and he kind of helps them through. To where, because he's got, you know, a lot of hip, everything like that, and he over exaggerates a little bit so that you can start to feel, those different maneuvers on him, and then take it back and implement it on your own horse. So I like having him go with me a lot of the time, so that he can also help me teach. You know, it's not, again, all on me. He helps me teach the clinics as well as Julia. He's a nice little outlet for people to learn with.
That's fantastic. I think that's one of the challenges, one of the biggest challenges I find with students in clinics, is that they struggle to get the right feeling with their horse because they're aiming for something that they've never potentially experienced before. So they don't even know if they're right or wrong or where they might fall along that spectrum as far as asking for what it is they want or even knowing what it is they want. So I think that's fantastic that you've got him there as kind of as an assistant coach, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you hit it right on the head. It's, you know, something outside of their norm. So it's hard to teach, you know, a thought process, but, you know, once you kind of grab that feeling, then you got it, and then you can replicate it on your own horse. So
yeah.
It's nice having a little helper there to really kind of show, and, you know, he's going to make them, you know, make you work on it, but, you know, as well as give it to you when you need it. So that's the nice part. He's got that mentality.
That's perfect.
Yeah. So that's the trick, is finding the right balance in a horse to be able to do everything correct and incorrect and know the difference and when to do it.
Right. Right. Absolutely. So that's great that he's able to help you like that. And like you said, that he's got the mind to do that, that he's not going to just give the right answer unless you ask the question right. That's got to be tremendously valuable for your students.
I think they all really like it because they, Julia's younger brother. So, I mean, they got a couple horses down to their place, but they still come up here and they want to ride mine. They'll take care of them and make them look really good when they're doing it.
There you go. That's great. So your business together now, you guys are training together, is that right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Perfect. And Julia's being kind of quiet there. She's got me a little worried for you there. I don't think in the time I've known you, Julia, I don't think I've heard you that quiet for that long. I can say that because I'm on this side of the phone call and you're over on that side.
No.
Oh goodness. So what's your primary focus for your training? Are you doing a lot of cult starting, a lot of kind of the reining training? Do you each have a focus? Do you both focus together? How does that work?
I think the cool thing about with Michael and I is we definitely focus on a lot of the same things, but we each have, you know, our own niches as far as, like, for instance, for me, you know, Michael enjoys it and he knows how to teach it, but I really enjoy the liberty stuff. I really enjoy the groundwork, teaching your horse to connect, the tricks even. So that, because I think because of my background in performing, that's just where my heart is. You know, that's where what I love to do. And so I'm able to kind of work on that. And then there's different things as far as Michael really dives into the horsemanship side of things, learning how to better communicate with your horse. And like what you said earlier, teaching clients how to ask the right questions to get the right answer. And Michael's so good about talking to people and teaching them in a way that they can understand. And so he works on that. And that definitely, I think, in all of his training, throws a little bit of the reining training in there just because it builds such a solid foundation when you have that control. You know, a lot of what we do is working with riders with confidence as well, and so we're able to work through that control and teach them, you know, how you control each different parts of your body and the horse's body and how you can connect everything. And basically help with the confidence side of things, because an unconfident rider is typically unconfident because somewhere they feel like they have a lack of control. So if you can work on fixing that and making them feel like they have more control of what they're doing, then their riding starts to show, plus they have something to focus on. So the groundwork and everything is definitely where I focus, where Michael is much more in the written work, although we both do it all. Michael's constantly teaching me new things with the riding and the reining side of things, and then of course we're both always searching to learn more for our own programs.
That's fantastic. Good. So you work with a lot of riders then that are lacking in confidence?
Yes. I would say that one thing that we do is we do have a really good variety, and it also, which I'm sure you see all the time, is it also depends on where you go, since we do a lot of traveling like you do. You know, it kind of depends on what part of the United States you're in, depending on if, whether it's more for performance, trails, confidence, whatever that is. But I would say we do a lot of the confidence building because we do the retreats. And those, when we do the retreats, which is where we actually partner with an equine gestalt life coach, who is actually my mother, and we bring them in and pamper them and spend so much time with them and, you know, feed them and everything like that. And the mom does her side of things. We end up working with a lot of confidence in that area. I would say probably 85 to 90%. What do you think, Michael?
In the retreats.
Yeah, in the retreats.
Yeah.
Wow. So how do those retreats work? That's pretty intriguing.
Well, like, it's actually pretty cool for this, because I know part of it, what we were talking about, was the personal growth. And basically that's the entire retreat syllabus, or how we go off of everything, is what we've kept finding in our training is that there was issues that were arising in the training that necessarily weren't training issues. They were confidence from other parts of our lives that were relaying to our horse. And, you know, when we walk into the round pen or step into the saddle, everything that we bring, the horse has to accept. You know, whether we're angry that day, mad that day, upset that day, scared that day, you know, we immediately, when we walk in, we step into that horse's bubble. And so our horse, a lot of times, can be very telling of those different emotions. And so with the retreats, I mean, we kept seeing that in clinics. And so it was trying to get everybody focused on what we were doing with the training. But we realized when we stepped out into the retreats that we were able to take it further. So basically, Kim takes the first part of the day, and she works strictly on personal growth, you know, learning about you, learning about who it is that you really are, you know, outside of, you know, how many kids do we have, what job do we work, you know, outside of the reality things as far as, like, who it is that you are. And it's strictly personal growth, you know, team building, all of that stuff. And then when you're in a better mindset, then the second part of the day goes into the training side. And we've been doing this for
2 years.
Yeah, about 2 years. And it's powerful. We call it our secret weapon. Because you just work through so many more things, you know, your clinics are so intimate, but it is a retreat. You know, they come, we lodge them, we feed them 3 meals a day. Like, we massage their horses. There's been several times we brought in massage therapists for the people. So we try to keep it as light and retreat oriented as we can, but then give them as much horsemanship as we can during that process.
So there's a lot of kind of wiping the chalkboard clean then that would be happening for the riders as they go through this process, and then they're bringing a better product, I'm sure, to their horse when they're doing that. That's pretty cool. I imagine you guys see quite a bit of breakthroughs with the retreats like that then.
Yeah, it's really amazing as far as the breakthroughs. And there, sometimes, you know, when we first started, the breakthroughs were almost scary because it was like they were just huge. But and the cool thing is it creates, you know, doesn't just create another clinic participant. It almost creates another family member with us. And so because you get in that, they're typically 3 to 4 days. So you spend quite a bit of time with them. And so you get to know them really well, and you know what it is, why they are in the horses, what about the horses is it that drives them, and what about their life is holding them back from better connecting with their horses.
I think that's very cool. I think that's very cool. What kind of changes then do you see with the horses? Do you guys get to do sort of an evaluation with the riders and horses before you start, or do you, what's the process that way?
So they start, typically we do a half day the first day of their week where they start just with everybody. So everybody gets to know everybody. We go into, my mother goes into, so that's basically her time. She goes into all the different ways of their, you know, teaching them and asking questions. She's the one that's the brains behind it all. She has a 2-year certification in just the fine of life coaching. And so she, that's basically her side, and then we go in from there, the horsemanship side on the next day. And so we don't necessarily merge a lot of this stuff. The mom does her stuff, and then we do ours. But what mom does prepares everybody so much more for what they're doing, and there's so many releases going on. They're able to better kind of focus on the horsemanship side of things, plus, you know, a lot of times we go into a clinic, and I know Michael's the young one, so it's a little bit different, especially than like a John Lyons clinic per se. People come in and they're scared, they're really nervous, and so when you do the retreat, because we've had the opening and everything out, it kind of cuts all of that out. They just get to work. You know, they're not nervous. What's Michael gonna say? What's he gonna think of me? Is he gonna think I'm just a, you know, a crazy rider, you know, all these things, they're able to actually focus on what it is that they're doing. And so that's when we see the big changes in the horsemanship side of things, because you have, like, instead of having, you know, 25% student or 50% of your student, you have, you know, more like 100% of your student focused on what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool. So they're not only are they kind of bringing a better slate to the horse, they're bringing a more open slate to the learning experience then, because they've been able to let go of a lot of that baggage.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's really, honestly, we've been doing it for 2-3 years. It's extremely hard to put in the words. I just have to tell, you know, the clients, they have to almost trust in it a little bit, and then they come and, you know, we have a lot of returning people, and it's even the people that come to it or even struggle to put into words, you know, what it is that actually happens. And it's really not because of what we do. It's all of what mom does, because it's her side of things that's really powerful.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So this is all about the personal development and moving on and kind of becoming more so that we can be more and do more for and with our horses. What sort of time now that you guys are together and teaching together and that whole deal, what sort of time have you got? Have you figured out a way to have that time for yourselves?
We really enjoy the the traveling part and getting to where we, you know, go across the country teaching clinics. And, you know, what we try to do is plan a day or two on the either side, the front or the back side of the clinic, to go out and explore a different part of the country. And, you know, that's kind of been our goal, plan everything to have, you know, a little bit of, you know, time with each other to kind of go out and just, you know, get back to where we enjoy just, you know, riding together. And we're, you know, we don't have to always be working together. We can just go out and enjoy our time together, because, you know, it's a lot to work with your spouse, but, you know, because there are definitely days that you work home with you, and especially when you work at home, then you never feel like you get away.
Right, you never leave it. Sure, sure.
So, you know, that's been a good learning thing for the pair of us, you know, to work through and make sure that we're always making sure that we go out and make time just to be together and enjoy what we, you know, both like to do together. You know, that may just not necessarily always be a horse thing. You know, we may just go hiking one day, or, you know, just go to the movies together. You know, that's a big deal, trying to get time just to do that. So,
right.
So for us, you know, just doing that and, you know, pushing each other a little bit to continue to, you know, expand our knowledge and to, you know, drive each other to chase what we want to do, you know, like with the programs, you know, me taking up extra work so that Julia can work on one of her programs is a phenomenal deal for me. You know, I'm excited for her to learn more so that she can share it with me. And then, you know, she does the exact same when I want to go, you know, ride with Josh or ride, you know, with my parents, or go to my sister's house or whatever, you know, go ride with another clinician. She is all for it, you know, pushing me to do those things so that, you know, we're always kind of bettering ourselves and getting new ideas about horsemanship and kind of going through and getting new material to work with, you know, because if you're stuck in the same spot all the time, you know, you're not making any progress.
It's really easy to get stale. Yeah,
absolutely.
I totally agree. And it's so important to be able to have that time to balance things out, like you say, with the time of getting away and the time of, you know, whether it's hiking or going to the movies or any of that stuff, being able to find the balance for that. And of course, the balance is different for everybody, right? You know, you might be able to take one day out of 8 to do that, and maybe that's enough to keep you going. And I'm sure you've had, as we all do, some weeks where maybe you just probably need a little bit more time down, and others where maybe you need a little bit less. And this is a business that can very easily take a lot out of you, time-wise and effort-wise and energy-wise, and, you know, the physical as well as the mental energy.
I was gonna say, I think the mental, you know, is a real, real big key, you know, factor in this deal, is because you're not just pushing yourself to teach, you know, a horse. You're also pushing yourself to teach a person, and you're trying to figure out all these different ways to explain it, and really, you know, having your brain on that high gear all the time. It's like playing doggone ping pong.
You know, yeah.
You ain't doing nothing, but by the end you're sweating because this chess match in your head, you know, work with these horses and stuff, and these different riders, you know, and everybody, you know, speaks a little bit of a different language, as far as, you know, the hips or the different maneuvers and things like that. We all call it something different, but we mean the same darn thing. So,
right.
That's kind of, you know, you got to kind of figure out the way to talk to everybody and everything like that. And it really makes it fun for me to really, you know, work with people and get everything going and breaking through some of their barriers and really watch the evolution of the horse and rider. That's what really drives me. To do this, I didn't start with a passion for riding. I actually started with a passion for teaching, and the horses just came with it.
That's great. That's great. So does it get you super energized when you've got somebody that makes a breakthrough like that with their horse?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's awesome. I love that's actually more rewarding for me than feeling like I made a breakthrough. Cause I, you know, horses for me, I can do that because I've devoted so much time to doing it. But getting somebody to do it themselves is a lot more powerful for me because it really is inspiring for me. But watching the reaction from the person is actually a really, really rewarding deal, you know, for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. That's one of those things that I find at the end of the day, the last lesson of the day or the last rider of the day, boy, if they come in and they get a lot out of it and they're really trying and they're really making breakthroughs, I feel as energetic as if I could just double the work day right there. You know, that's
it really, yeah, you know, it kind of inspires you to go and put that extra ride on your horse or do something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's an energizer for sure. That's very cool. That's very cool. So let's see. All right. We talk about the work balance and the keeping the work at work and not bringing it home. And like you said, it's really difficult, particularly when home is where your work is. So I'm going to ask, and it's really fun having the two of you on here together. I've not done one of these before where we've had two people on the phone. So hopefully Julia doesn't beat you up at the end of this or anything like that. She's probably pinching you, right? So we can't see it. She's pinching you for. Yeah. I knew it. So I'm going to pit you two maybe against each other here. Which one of you is better at leaving the work at work?
Definitely Michael.
You have a hard time, Julia, leaving it in the arena?
Yes, my brain kicks on about 9 o'clock at night. So poor Michael will come in and he's ready to crash. And I have all kinds of ideas on that I want to do. And he's just like, honey, please, can I sleep?
And then my brain kicks on, you know, about 6:30 in the morning, and then she's not ready to talk to me then.
So you wake her up, you kick her out of bed, and say, hey, I've got all these ideas, right?
Yeah, I'm like, hey, really ready for the day. Like, let's talk about this.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So do you guys, I love that you're doing this together as far as the training operation and the clinics and that sort of thing. Do you have, we're going to ask Michael this specifically first. Michael, do you have kind of a most memorable experience so far with Julia by your side teaching and training and traveling down the road?
Say that it's one over the other. I mean, just having her there really gives me an extra kind of dimension to the actual clinics or anything that we're doing because she really can, like if I'm taking the lead in the clinic, I don't always get to see what everybody's thinking at the same time, but mm-hmm. She'll really step back and you know, during lunch or something, she can say, all right, you know, this person needs extra help or this person's not getting it quite yet. You need to kind of spend some time with them. And it really, you know, every clinic that we together is, I feel like they're better because she brings an extra set of eyes that are seeing the same things that I see. So it's almost like having two of the same person because, you know, being on the same thought process as somebody else is really helpful because they can give you more ideas and they can say, well, what about if you tried this or something like that. So I think all the clinics that we do together are really a lot more functional because she is there to to help me and help me make sure that every single participant gets everything that they can out of it. And that's not just me going off and trying to do the best I can. You know, splitting yourself up in between 10 to 12 people is a little bit difficult in a day. So
right.
To have Julia there to take a couple off your plate really is extremely helpful. And Julia, you know, having her own style and her own different, you know, vocabulary to use with the training and, you know, her own method of doing things, you know, really is a cool contrast to what I do because she's, you know, has a lot of different experience than I do. So, you know, with Josh, I got a lot of heavy dose into the reining and the performance side and doing that stuff. And Julia really brings an extra element of the horsemanship, the creativity of doing like the freestyle side. So she really it's really fun to hear her brain work about that during the clinic. And, you know, I think probably if I had to pick like a real big memory for her, it's watching her get somebody to break through for the first time and just seeing how happy she was about it. That was pretty exciting for me. But I think in an overall picture, just her being there and being able to help me make sure everybody gets everything they need is really probably my favorite thing about having her with me and you know, working with her.
I think that's great, and I totally agree with you. You know, you can get so focused on one particular rider having a challenge, and in that moment, that's all you can see, right? As a teacher, you get so drilled in to kind of hone and help and fine-tune that challenge that rider's working with, and for her to be able to kind of cast a net over everyone and soak up what everyone's experiencing in that moment. That's great because there can be things when you're working with one horse or rider, there can be maybe somebody else has a question or they miss something and then it can become something that we don't get back to unless we have somebody there to draw us to that.
Absolutely. And also having somebody else there saying the same thing in their own language and saying it their way really is a nice bonus because, you know, if I say something 100 times, Julia could say it one word different and it just totally makes sense to the same rider, even though we've said the same thing.
Right.
You know, that's a great asset for me as a clinician. And then as well as, you know, because just like you said, if there's a problem, you're going to try to keep everyone safe in a clinic. So you beeline for that deal and you try to help anybody there that's getting into a wreck or about to or something like that. You try to help them through it, but then everybody else kind of dozes off or they get stuck watching and they're not making progress anymore. And it's nice that either Julia can handle the problem or, you know, somebody that's having a difficult time understanding, or she can continue to drive the clinic. You know, that's a huge, huge asset for me is that the clinic never stops just because one of our focuses is off the clinic.
Right, right. I think that's great. All right, Julia, we're going to throw it over to you now that Hubby's earned some great bonus points for that answer. that's awesome. So Julia, do you have any particular memorable experiences teaching and traveling with Michael that really stand out that way?
As far as, and I think it's just because, you know, it's more recent, it was definitely one of the most fun things that is at the beginning of the year, we took 2 months and went on four. And Michael's gone on small tours. We tend to do, you know, mini tours basically several times throughout the year. So when I say mini, they're small as far as, you know, he's only gone for a couple weeks. He's back home for a couple weeks before he leaves again. And but this year, at the beginning of the year, right after we got married, we decided that we were going to spend about 2.5 months on the road, and we went all out. Loaded up our horse trailer, stayed in it, had our horses, and just left. And that was pretty incredible because it was really cool to see the different, because we had clinics every weekend, and how he was going, you know, the clinics, unless it's like a Liberty clinic or something like that, Michael always leads. Michael, you know, he does, I'm really there just kind of as backup. He does an incredible job teaching the clinics. And like you said, as far as like, I'm there to, you know, help a straggler, see what's going on, see where we need to go, you know, offer a different way of seeing things if somebody needs it, that type of thing. But, you know, seeing him on the road in Wyoming, because I wasn't before, there was a lot of clinics I was able to go to, but I wasn't able to necessarily go to all of them. So to see the progression of him go and watch somebody come into a clinic, I think my favorite, we had a really good clinic in Florida one year, and it was, we had just a phenomenal group of riders, and they came through the clinic. We had 12 of them that year, and in we were in Tallahassee, Florida, really good friends clinic, and to watch him teach these 12 riders was really cool, because they went from some of them, you know, having pretty inconsistent season speed controls, you know, some foundation work, to at the end of 3 days, every single one of them was doing flat knee changes. And it was,
that's quite a feat.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible, because a lot of them were like people that, you know, never would have thought that they could ever do a flat knee change, like in their life. And they're out there doing flat knee changes with ease, going across the street. And to see, I've got pictures of them with their hands in the air and screaming and yelling, because, you know, that was a huge goal for them. And so I think that's the coolest thing for me is, you know, I get to sit on the sidelines, but at the end of the day, when everybody's tired but super excited about what they're doing, they get to come to me and they get to say, you know, this is what I learned. I can't believe that this is what happened in this clinic, you know, all of that. And so it's a super proud moment for me in that sense, is like to be able to get the feedback, like, what did you think of the clinic? You know, how did you respond? Did you understand it? That type of thing. So that we can constantly be, you know, making it better. You've got two brains now that are trying to figure out the best way to teach each rider so that they understand it. And not only that they understand it in the clinic, but they understand it so that they can do it themselves at home.
Right, right. That's a huge takeaway for folks, for sure. Being able to recreate it without you there.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love it. Very cool, very cool. So you guys are still teaching quite a bit on the road as well?
We are, well, we are starting next year. We're pretty much home-based as of right now. We've got a couple, I think Michael said earlier, we're going to the fraternity. I think we're going to Oklahoma for another one. And possibly to Arkansas, but for the most part, we try to spend our fall and winter at home. So we take in a couple training horses and hang out here, do a couple clinics here, and try to hang out in this area. And then start in January, we'll start touring again.
Very cool. And so you guys just had a recent open house at the new facility, right?
Yeah. Yes, we did.
That's awesome. I saw some photos from that. It looks like you had a great turnout.
Yeah, we had fun. We're still cleaning up.
Yeah.
Are you?
It's one thing for going out on the road, and then, you know, my lovely wife always planning some huge event and only giving me a couple weeks at home to clean and stuff like that. That's probably the most exciting and the most, probably some of the quickest times you'll see me moving.
When she's got the whip behind you, is that what you're saying?
You know, I'm real responsive at that. You know, getting threats. So it's, we had fun, and, you know, my dad came and my mom came, which was phenomenal. It was a really, really good time. We had some great vendors, and we met a lot of fun people. And, it was fun. I think we had 150-something people through the doors that day. And,
nice.
So that was pretty exciting, and it was just kind of a fun way. Because we did it the weekend, our 1 year anniversary. You know, we got to see a lot of our friends from all over and meet a lot of new ones. And, you know, kind of put ourselves into this facility where we feel a little bit more at home. We only got in here in April, so it's been quite the turn for us.
Yeah, so you got in there, and then even though you were there, you were still on the road full time, you know, or at least most of the time going around teaching clinics, yeah?
whole time. So like we moved in and then we left for 2.5 months. God, just torture knowing that you have an indoor at home and you're riding in the rain everywhere and you're like, shoot,
Right. So you had somebody taking care of the place at home while you were away? Did you have boarders there, or how did that work?
Actually, we didn't even start really anything. We had people coming in to take care of it and check on it and stuff like that, but we really didn't have anybody as far as horses, and we really loaded up all of our horses, brought them out west with us. So
Gotcha.
we essentially, brought everything but the kitchen sink. And so that was super fun just to kind of have, everything that you needed in the trailer with you and being able to travel across the country, almost coast to coast. And, a ride in every single state that you stayed in. That was a really fun experience for the both of us, I think.
I'll bet.
I don't know when the next time we'll be able to do like a big 2.5 month tour again will be. That'll be maybe a year or two down the road. We'll have a couple interns in here not long and stuff like that. So
Good.
yeah, so it'll
Good.
be
That's awesome.
exciting.
Yeah. So you've mentioned a couple times now dad. You talked about mom and dad showing up at your open house. And for anybody listening who maybe doesn't know you, doesn't know your background, dad, who you're referring to, Mr. John Lyons, known as America's most trusted horseman, one of, in fact, I think probably the first clinician I had ever heard of when I was growing up with horses. What was that, or what is that like, kind of having dad be who dad is?
That's a fun question because, for when I meet people, and they're like, wow, he's your dad. But for me, it's not anything crazy because, that's my dad. That's who I've grown up with for so
Right.
long.
Do you get a lot of kind of starstruck clinic participants?
Watching your dad forever and this and that and the other. And, it's super fun to hear how big of an impact he made every single place I go. That's a really fun deal to hear about, how he's changed people's lives for the better throughout the years, which was really what inspired me to pursue the horse training. Because I didn't originally want to train horses in the beginning. I actually wanted to go to school to be a physical therapist
Right, I remember you telling me about that a while back. Yeah.
and sports medicine. I actually wanted to be a trainer for the Denver Broncos, but I kind of figured out school was going to be longer than I anticipated, so I was quickly landing the plane on that dream, and I wanted to impact people's lives, and be able to do something that I really enjoyed. And I didn't pick up training horses till I was 18. So I had ridden a grand total of 30 minutes before I turned 18, and I decided to move across the country with my older brother and let him torture and teach me how to ride. So that
I remember you sharing some stories with me about him teaching you to ride too.
It was pretty exciting. I mean, you would have been laughing your pants off if you watched me in the beginning. I still do. But it was pretty exciting. I think he got to do all the things that he's always dreamed of doing. To really torture people and ride. And he really got to test them out on me, because our parents weren't close enough to really make him behave.
Ah, gotcha.
That was the big thing, is nobody could really get him into trouble when I was there. And I was so naive. I thought he was going to really treat me really, really nice because he's my brother. But oh my gosh, you talk about some serious writing that we did. He really is who I attribute a lot of my writing to, is, you know, my older brother. He really, really did me a huge favor by taking just the time and the energy. I know I probably drove him nuts a lot of the time, but he really did teach me a lot. And, you know, if for me, in my opinion, he's probably one of the top. If for me personally, he's the top clinician in the world. He is amazing to watch on a horse. And it really kind of makes me great because I watch him do something that would take me about, you know, a couple of hours to fix, and he's done it in about 10 minutes. And really, really drives me crazy from a competitive little brother's standpoint.
I'll bet.
But, from the you know, really supportive little brother, I'm really proud. But, you know, I got two sides of that same coin.
So. Right.
But it's a lot of fun, and I any chance I get, I ride with anybody. You know, my sister just came down, Brandy, and that was a huge, huge bonus for me. We got to ride together for what was almost the first time in a clinic atmosphere, second time, you know, in a clinic atmosphere. We got to ride together, and that was just this year.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy because we all keep such different schedules, and it is hard to get us all in the same spot.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. Yeah. So, like ships passing in the night, right? Everybody's got booked somewhere across the country every weekend, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And, you know, my family's from coast to coast almost. So it's like me and Josh are on this side of the country. My parents and my sister are on the west side of the country. So, you know, Christmases get wild, I tell you that.
That's got to be awesome, though. That's great.
Christmas / family reunion and everything. So we get a lot done.
Nice. Good. So did you do, you said it wasn't until really about 18 that you started riding. Did you travel with John for any of the teaching that he was doing?
Yeah, I mean, I went to a couple of the expos, but I was in school and I was super heavily involved in the sports, and I was not, you know, I was one of those guys that I was not going to let my team down by going somewhere, you know, really cool. You know, super, super exciting, you know, a really awesome clinic or expo, but I wasn't going to let them down, so I actually would stay home. And I think about when I was 16, my parents started leaving me the horses a lot of the times when they would fly to their different clinics.
Ah.
And I, you know, they were really, really good at slow playing, you know, this whole horse deal.
Uh-huh.
So I started taking care of them, and then when I was 18, that was when my dad did the rodeo of the horse, and I actually quit basketball because he needed me to go drive a truck across the country for him, and that was, you know, my first real love affair with Tennessee. I really, really loved being down there in Franklin at the time is where it was, and it was really, really just a huge eye-opener for me on what the horses could actually do, and as well as you know, watching all those clinicians down there, you know, is Tommy Garland and Richard Winters that were in that competition with them, and just watching the three of them and what they were doing with the horses, and you know, how quickly they were doing it, and you know, the people that they inspired to do it, that was really what kind of sold me on this whole deal, was being able to inspire people to go home and chase their dream. You know, that was a really, really powerful game changing moment for me. And not probably but 2 weeks after, you know, I decided I was done with the whole thought process of you're gonna go and go into the medical field, and you're gonna start in the horse training. So I have a confession. I actually started ditching out when I started college. I didn't go to class, and I would sneak back up to my hometown and watch my brother and teach his certification program.
Really?
Yeah, so I got in a little bit of trouble for that, but I'm doing okay now. That's been forgiven. So
good, good. You've made good on that one.
Right, exactly.
So Josh was doing at that point quite a bit of the teaching of the trainer certification program. Then, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. That was one of his last years doing it in Colorado.
Okay.
And he would take 20 students for 12 weeks, and they bring in two unbrokes, and then they leave with finished horses and be able to be certified John Goshline trainers.
Okay.
And then once I got into the picture, he actually decided to change up the program a little bit, and he actually takes less riders, and they actually get further because it was a really interesting change. They actually get further with their horses, and they learn more because it is so much more intimate.
Sure.
It was so cool to kind of go through and learn those things and be able to partake in some of those classes and meet all the people that were coming through, because there are some phenomenal people that go through those classes.
I'll bet.
Some of my best friends, you know, have gone through those, and, you know, being together for that long, you know, you really kind of forge some really good friendships.
Without a doubt, yeah, yeah. So it's still a 12-week program?
It's actually a six-week program now.
Six-week, now that they've dropped down the number of riders? Okay.
Yeah. Well, and it's only to five riders. So.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, it is one-on-one with Josh all the time, and there are a lot of times that you'll have different clinicians through there, you know, if they're going to do anything. You know, Dan James is up there all the time, and oh goodness, I don't even know who goes up there right now. I've been up there in a couple months, so who knows who Josh is getting running through.
And this is at Josh's place in Tennessee, in Murfreesboro? Okay.
Yeah, okay. Up in Nashville, yeah.
Yeah, wow. That's very cool. That's very cool. To have kind of grown up with that has got to be pretty neat.
It is, and I think it's different for me because I really kind of was a little bit ignorant to what exactly he did do for the industry and everything like that. You know, and the more I kind of read and, you know, hear, it was a lot more than I had ever imagined. And you know, he's really done a great job and a great service to the horse industry, and paved the way for a lot of young guys like us, you know, and
right,
kind of thing, and really kind of broke the mold. And it's so much fun to have that to chase, you know, that goal to always be chasing. So I really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun for me.
That's awesome. That's awesome. He's definitely a man who has crossed all disciplines, all breeds, all sort of walks in the industry. So it's definitely a great path to follow, like you said.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So goals for you, goals for Michael Lyons Horsemanship. What are you guys looking to in the future?
Well, for me, Julie will probably have a different set of goals. For me, it's to really continue to develop as a clinician and as a rider, and to start to push myself into really branch out the different disciplines. And eventually the you know, kind of my long-term goal and my wish is to actually get into some showing and things like that again. I had just kind of got burnt out on the showing because I really stressed myself out showing.
Mm. That's easy to do, for sure.
Oh, goodness, great. Yeah, it's pretty wild. But so maybe get into that a little bit more, kind of find more outlets to enjoy the horses and not always have to be on, you know, in clinician mode where my brain's going a mile a minute.
Right.
And just, you know, always developing and keeping my style, you know, fresh, because like you said, it's so easy and it is so quick to get stale and to get, you know, stuck in your training. So just pushing yourself to continue to ride with other people, and you know, always be open-minded to everything. And that's a big thing I tell my students is, you know, I want you to ride with every single person you ever get the opportunity to ride with, because you know, there you can learn something from anyone.
Right.
And that's the thing is, don't ever get too big for your britches to not absorb good information when it comes to you. You know, so that's a big thing for me is to just keep pushing myself to be better, and to really hone my skill. And Julie will probably have a couple different ones. So buddy, what the real goals are.
All right. So now the boss gets to tell us what really the business goals are for Michael Lyons Horsemanship.
No, I think he really, I think he's correct. And I think it also goes back to the original thing that we talked about is, you know, the ever evolving. Now, of course, we have goals because I think we very strongly believe in setting goals and working towards them, and that's how you continue to grow. And I definitely think that, you know, last year, if you would have asked us this question, it would have been totally different because, you know, we had no idea that we were going to have this facility. And now that we have such a place and we have the cabins, we have, you know, the stalls and everything that here, the places and the indoor, I think a lot of it is you turning this into a learning center and doing what Michael says and, you know, becoming a clinician for all kinds of different reasons as far as the horsemanship, for across the board as far as disciplines, teaching the how to connect with your horse, communicate with your horse, that type of thing, but also building this facility so that different clinicians can come in. You know, we're like what Michael said, we very much believe that you can learn from everybody. So I know we've had different clinicians in here before, and I'm sure at some point we will again, and just trying to create the best learning atmosphere for our students that we can, so that we can all continue to learn, whether it's in massage or, you know, the skeleton system of the horse and the health of the horse or the horsemanship. But I definitely think the clinician and expos and everything, especially next year, is where we'll go, as well as really working on the facility here and getting home base strong and turning this into a center of learning.
That's awesome. And you guys had mentioned, I think we chatted about it a little bit before we went live, but you had mentioned that you're starting to get some bookings for 2018 now at this point. Is that right?
Yes, sir. We've got the clinics are starting to book. So a lot of our clinics that we do every year, you know, they're already on the books, but we have set aside a couple different months for new clinics. So we're starting that. We're just trying to get everything finalized because we have a lot more questions that we have to ask ourselves about next year than we've had before, as far as like how far do we want to be on the road? How can we get a balanced facility and being on the road? Mm-hmm. All of these questions, trying to figure that out. And so it's taken us just a little bit longer to get our 2018 map. Typically, I have that map, you know, before August even starts. So because of, we don't really know, it's not like we're going on tour for 2 months, right? And this type of thing, we've got to figure out, how long can I be gone? How long can I be gone? And the facility still run because we do a couple borders now and our horses. And then we do have training horses, but that's over the winter. So to come next year, the training horses are gone.
Gotcha. So then when you're on the road, you won't have to worry so much about getting back to the training horses and that sort of thing.
Yep.
Good.
We do keep the border stay, and then the place also, because we have the cabins, they run as an Airbnb. So somebody has that. Hopefully the goal is next year somebody runs that full time. But that really has nothing to do with the horse side of things, except for when there's a clinic or something like that going on. But at any given time, depending on the events, who's wanting to go where, there may be people in the cabins renting them from the Airbnb.
Gotcha. So at this point, it doesn't have much to do with the horses, but at the same time, it has a lot to do with your time and your management, right? So it can certainly interject there, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
And just like you said, just finding that balance of, you know, taking time out for us and also making sure this facility runs and keep people interested in learning how things go on here, you know.
Right.
With the total horse health and everything. everything like that, you know, muscle and skeletal and nutrition and everything like that. So we try to host a kind of a bunch of different clinics out of here, you know, not just horsemanship clinics, but kind of everything.
That's great. That is great. Let's see. All right. So I'm going through my questions and the notes that I've been taking here, and man, we have covered a ton. We've covered a whole lot of stuff here. So we do have a question that I really liked. I'm going to scroll through and see if I can find a question that popped up here from one of our listeners. And gang, if you're listening to us live right now through Facebook, feel free, if you have questions, put them in the comments section below this video here, and we'll get to your questions as we can. Where did it go? Let's see. So Renee asked a question that I think to me is fascinating. She asks, what do you want a student to bring to the clinic besides a horse, of course? So and this was popping up when we were, I believe, when we were talking about students being open and receptive and things like that. So if you were to talk about kind of how the students would bring their ideal self to the clinics, what would you recommend that way?
Well, for me, you know, bringing you know, almost everything but the kitchen sink. You know, it's great to have something, but you always are missing that one little thing. So, you know, for me, I try to, like, when I go to a clinic, I try to bring anything I think I could possibly use. So, like, you know, just as far as just your basic horse equipment, you know, bringing just the open mind, the ability to be receptive, even if it's not your particular style of riding or teaching, to try to wade through and figure out, what is this person trying to say? And don't so much focus on how they get there, because you can change that to your own style. But focus on the result. You know, what are they looking for? What is what's the goal here? You know, just like Julia said, setting those goals. What's the objective of this exercise, and how can I pertain it to my riding? So is it, you know, if I'm doing an exercise for lifting the shoulder, and I have a barrel racer and a trail rider standing next to each other, they both need it.
Right.
But which degree do you need to take it? So being able to take these things and figure out what is your own style of ride, you know, what do you enjoy doing, and what do you like, what is your goal for your personal riding, and being able to take information and try to fit it to yourself, you know, because a lot of times you have a way better idea of what your horse can do than I do, because you're the one with it all the time.
Right.
You know, so for me to come in and say, well, you should be doing this, this, and that, really isn't my place. I can give you all the ideas that rattle around in my head, and I swear, when I get into a clinic, my head starts to shake back and forth. I just kind of bounce out on the ground. So, being able, you know, and ask every question that crosses your mind, you know, anything, you know, whether, and if I don't know, I will figure out somebody that does know, or I'll blatantly tell you that I don't know.
Right.
And then it really encourages me to go look it up and research it myself. So never thinking that there's a dumb question, you know, because guaranteed there's going to be two or three other people that are sitting there that have the exact same one, but somebody's too scared to ask it.
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
And being able to mold everything to your style, because that's what you got to kind of, that's what they have to understand is, you know, as a trainer, and everybody that handles a horse is a trainer of some sort, good, bad, or ugly, they're trainers.
Right.
So being able to fit their own style, you know, if they want to do liberty and groundwork, how do they make the riding work fit that? You know, how do they make the horse lift the shoulders on the ground? How do they make the horse do spins at liberty? You know, things like that. Everybody wants the same kind of base feels. But take them and how much they hone that skill is really the difference. And don't be shut off to an exercise or something like that just because it doesn't feel like it's your style. It can be useful somewhere for a different horse.
Right.
That's really my big thing. It's really kind of just opening yourself up and dissecting how does it make sense for my training.
Right, exactly. It might not currently seem valuable, but at some point down the road, it sure will probably, you know, pop up.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
Do you got anything else you want to bring?
I think the only other thing that I think about a lot, and we can really try to focus a lot on in the clinics, before you come to a clinic, you have a sign-up sheet, basically, that goes through and asks a bunch of different questions. So I think a really big thing is like what he said with the open mind, but also having specific goals in mind for you and your horse, like what it is. Sometimes we have people that come to clinics and they come and they're like, well, I wanted to do it, I wanted to be here, but I really don't know what I want to work on. And so then, yes, as clinicians, Michael can go in and he can basically find your holes and he can start working on those. But if you come in and Michael's working on these holes, which you definitely need, but you wanted to also work on, you know, something specific over here that he didn't know about, then he may not get there. He's going to work on the holes that he sees and works from there. So now that we have the program implemented where they always, we have the goals before they ever even get there, it makes such a huge difference because it makes our riders really think about what it is that they want. Because
that's a great idea.
You can do a clinic all day long and teach them everything it is that you know, but if it doesn't pertain to what it is that they want to do, then it really doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of what Michael does is having those goals in mind and having – so we can implement them during the clinic. Because if you come, you wanted to learn side passes, but all we did was spins, or all we did was hips in or something like that, then you really haven't gotten what you've gotten something, but you might not have got exactly what you wanted. So having those goals in mind is really cool because he's able to work on the foundation and the holes that you have and give you the things that you really personally wanted that is going to, you know, get you excited about what you're doing.
Right. Well, and that saves Michael the time of having to play Sherlock Holmes and dig out and find the holes in the foundation then. You know, if the rider's coming there knowing, hey, I've got XYZ that I'm having trouble with, then you can go to XYZ or maybe a few steps back from that because maybe that's where the holes really initiate. But that would save you from starting at A, B, and C if where the problem really is showing up might be in XYZ.
I was going to be really impressed if you get the three letters before XYZ. But, yeah, it really, really does save me a ton of time because knowing what they're wanting really helps me tailor each clinic to the group at hand, you know?
Right.
Because clinics are really the same because everybody has different goals and they're in different places. And the goals can, like you said, it always kind of goes back, you know, full circle to ever-changing, ever-evolving pursuit of knowledge. That's just fine. If you go through one day and you're like, oh, hey, this thing, you know, hit me when I was sleeping, I want to try to learn this, that's great. You know, we'll add it into the program and we'll see what we can do. But that's a really, really big important piece is to, you know, have a general idea of where the clinic is going to go and then be able to really hit everybody's different goal is pretty important. So all the clinics are usually fairly different.
So with that in mind, with all the clinics being fairly different and with so much of our conversation being around kind of growth and personal development and that sort of thing, would you say that through the years now, you've seen your teaching style or your focus change at all?
The focus probably not so much, but the style definitely. The focus is to, you know, my main goal when I started doing this was to help people build something with their horse. So that's still the goal, and that's still my main focus. But how I do it has changed immensely, you know, bringing Julia in, letting her, having her teach me different ways of explaining something, or different ways of looking at something, or even different routes of getting there has really changed. The style I use has really changed, probably quite significantly from when I first started. So yeah, I think there's a lot of changes for the better. You know, just in my own teaching style and teaching method, I think that's a big part. And then also with Julia, you know, watching her throughout the time, just her growth, you know, just from me watching her growth, and not just her teaching, but her confidence teaching, you know, because we're a fairly young couple, and we, you know, going out and teaching people how to do this stuff is sometimes kind of intimidating because of how young we are. But being able to, you know, be confident in the work that you do and everything like that, for me watching her, it's one of those, you know, really proud moments for me, as I can really step back and just watch her turn loose and really get a clinic going.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Kind of settle into the swing of things and get the rhythm.
Absolutely.
That's very cool. That's very cool. How many clinics would you say, if you had to guess, through the years of teaching, how many clinics would you say you've taught up to this point? This is totally just an off the top of my head kind of a question.
I was gonna say, holy smokes! does that include teaching with Josh and stuff?
Sure, why not?
Holy cow!
Well, you do about 30 a year.
Yeah.
25 to 30 a year. The first couple years were a little less.
Yeah, but with Josh, there are more. So yeah. I don't know. Probably. I don't know how long have I did about probably 300 something maybe.
Nice. It's amazing when you start out teaching this, and this kind of came to mind with what you were talking about with Julia kind of getting into the swing of the clinics and starting to kind of feel her own rhythm and get comfortable. It's amazing to me how every clinic does bring their own challenge, but you definitely get that swing going, and you just get so much more comfortable with everything that shows up just from that experience.
Oh, absolutely. And then, you know, also the training, dealing with chaos training,
mm-hmm.
That's a huge life lesson that we can, you know, take to our work and everything like that. Being able to handle breakdowns, meltdowns, and things like that, and, you know, because everybody has off days, and so do our horses, everything like that. So being able to adjust everything, not take it so personally, and like with your training, don't take the training personally.
Right.
You know, that's a big part. Just, you know, kind of let it roll off your back and do these things. And, you know, that's a big, big part, figuring out how to continue on and not get yourself hurt.
Right, right.
You know, that's the biggest part is, you know, that attitude gets you everything. You know, attitude gets you everywhere. So how you respond to a negative impact, you know, or a negative piece in your life and your training, really will get you through it, you know, because I've learned that the hard way. You know, I've spent a lot of nights upset at myself on my training, and it's just fine. You know, it's like nothing ever happened.
Right. Well, I think that's definitely a sign of growth that way also, you know.
No doubt. And just watching Julia do that is great too. And handling the clinics in stride, and it was super nice in the beginning having Josh as a safety net to really kind of, you know, tell me, hey, you should have done this a little bit more, or that a little less. That was a huge safety blanket for me. But just let him turning me loose, I mean, I can't give him enough credit for that, because that's a gutsy move, turning your younger brother loose.
Yeah.
The world, you know, that's kind of crazy on his part.
Right, right, for sure. Well, and I think it's so fantastic that you had the opportunity to spend with him teaching and you know, watching him teach and all of those things. Also, I think that had to be a tremendous learning experience for you, almost like the student teacher idea.
Absolutely, that was invaluable to me. You know, watching him work with people and go through a lot of his clinics, you know, and even the certifications, which were longer clinics. So in that number, you know, I was adding those in, but you know, 6 weeks just watching him teach and, mm-hmm. and being able to dissect his brain as a student, but as a teacher as well. That was
right.
That was amazing, you know. And then you know, my parents too, just being able to dissect their brain on how to think about things is really, really amazing to have conversations with.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. You've got so much teaching experience to base off of, to dip into when you run into the struggles like that. I think that's fantastic. And it, you know, to me, it brings to mind kind of the older idea that we don't see as common anymore, but the older true legitimate apprenticeship idea, where a student would spend years and years working with their teacher, learning about the whole process. You know, anymore we seem to have folks that just kind of bounce around, and of course not everybody, but you know, there's a lot of just bouncing around and you know, making a stack of business cards off Vistaprint.com, and now you're a trainer or a clinician, you know, without all of that experience, like you talk about, you know, being able to get through John and through Josh. I think that's fantastic.
Great. That was one of my main deals, is that when I got out and decided to do this, I was going to make sure that I did it right before I ever said I was, you know, a trainer of any sort, of any caliber. I made sure that I spent, you know, 4.5, 5 years with Josh and mm-hmm. just working for him every single day and really absorbing every ounce of information I could. There was a lot of nights I couldn't sleep because I had so, I mean, I have books and notebooks and stuff like that, just full of information just running around my house.
That's awesome.
That I draw back on. Me being a terrible writer, I'm like, what in the heck was I trying to write at this time?
I'll bet that's pretty neat to look back and reflect on those.
Oh, gosh, it really isn't. And knowing more now than I did then, trying to really piece together what I was trying to say is was really interesting. You know, it's like trying to read a Chinese for a little while. I don't know.
That's awesome. That would be so neat to be able to look back and reflect on that. That's awesome. That's awesome. What would you say, and again, this is just kind of going where the conversation goes, but what would you say when you started teaching the clinics? What would you say was your biggest struggle, the thing you maybe dreaded the most popping up in a clinic? Was there anything like that? What was your biggest challenge personally?
Biggest fear was, and it's kind of always been my biggest fear, is failure to either deliver something, you know, a product that's good, deliver knowledge that is useful, everything like that. And the clinic that Julia was talking about earlier, where we got a bunch of the people doing the lead changes, mm-hmm. That was actually one of my very first solo clinics. And that I was mortified. I threw up for about 3 days before.
No way.
Oh my gosh, buddy.
He used public, to do that for a long time before clinics.
Public speaking. Started it. My brother started it. I've never really been a big fan of public speaking, but horses really helped me out because I feel like they take some attention off me.
Yes.
And now I can just ramble on for hours.
He isn't lying.
Right, yeah.
I don't know anything about that.
But, that was my biggest fear, was not being – I wouldn't sleep for probably 2 or 3 days before a clinic because I was horrified. Put so much pressure on myself, and I've gotten to where I've relaxed, and I have more confidence in what I'm doing, and with Julia helping me, it's a real big comfort. But just cheat because I didn't have my safety blankets.
Yeah.
Me and my brother or anything like that. So that was really stepping out on my own, doing like really giving this the full effort. That was a really scary moment for me, because when I left Josh, I didn't really know where I was going to live, what I was going to do, how I was going to make it. really know anything. So I just kind of, you know, did a leap of faith and got out here. And once I got out here, I started fixing one problem at a time. You know, where do I live? So I figured that out. And then I figured out, you know, how am I gonna make enough money to go for rent or get something to eat, you know?
Right.
So that was kind of the exciting part at the beginning, and it kept me really on my toes about everything. And now it's, you know, looking back from that to the facility that I'm in right now, it's quite the change for me, you know, being able to kind of slow yourself down and really appreciate what you've done in the last years. And like you say, just watch all that growth out of your personal self. Like me sleeping through the night at Cranks is a real big jump.
Wow. Yeah.
Really, really nice change.
instead of being sick the whole night before.
Wow. It was pretty exciting for a while there.
And that was more the fear of not being able to deliver, or that was more the fear of the whole public speaking idea?
Probably a combination of the pair of them. You know, being able to make sure I get my point across, but as well as giving people exactly what they're looking for and not telling them what they're looking for.
Yeah. One thing too, as far as just from what I've learned from Michael, what I've learned from Josh, what I've learned from John, and how I've watched what they do, you know, they're all incredible horsemen, but one thing that they instill so hard, and you'll definitely appreciate this because as a clinician, you know, you can be a heck of a horseman and a really bad teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, not just, you know, how is it that you're training your horse? You know, if you're just spending time training a horse, then you're just spending time, you know, communicating with that work. And so that part get kind of up gone. And then when you go out in clinic, it becomes your job to make sure that what you're doing with that horse is relayed to the rider, and not just, you know, in a way that they really actually understand it. And so I think Michael put so much pressure on himself because John and Josh and Brady had instilled that you are a teacher. A teacher is what you is your, you know, your utmost job before you're even horse trainer, is that you should be able to teach them well to where they understand, to where they enjoy it, to where they like it. That type of thing. And so I think Michael put a lot of pressure on himself in that beginning time, and that's the throwing up behind the barn before he goes out type thing, because he has set a drive to please, and he knew the training side, and he knew all that, and he had all that under control. He just wanted to make sure that he was teaching it right, and as far as not teaching it right, but teaching it to where they could understand. Mm-hmm. And so with the clinics, he had been doing a lot of clinics. Like you said, he always had the net of him. He'd done a lot of lessons when he was with Josh. And then when he goes out and now he's doing the lessons with the clinics, it's two completely different atmospheres. Lessons are, you know, an hour working on one thing, one problem, typically, you know, a couple things that you're working slowly and really focusing on that. When Michael goes out, that's a you've got 10 or 12 different riders with several different problems apiece, and you're trying to get everybody to understand what you're doing and work through it, and you're giving them a lot of information.
Mm-hmm.
So for Michael to learn how to balance, how to do a lesson, and how to do a clinic was huge, and he's done it so successfully. But I know you understand that as far as the two different ways, and the different ways sometimes when Michael goes out and teaches one rider, what the same problems that two riders, and they have each different problems, you may not be able to teach them both the same way.
Exactly. Exactly. You've got to have at least 100 different ways of saying hello. Yeah.
Exactly. Absolutely. And so I think a lot of that comes from time and doing it and watching John do it and watching other clinicians do it and listening if anywhere we can. I think that's one of our biggest things is how can we find different ways to explain the same thing?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's always the challenge for a teacher of any kind, right? I don't care if it's horses or history or art or what it is. I think that's always the biggest challenge that we have is how to impart it in the way that it can be received by the student.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So, Michael, you're not throwing up behind the barn anymore before you teach any clinics. Are you getting better? You feel pretty comfortable with the whole public speaking idea now?
Yeah, I've even got a few expos in that I'm not throwing up at, so I'm pretty excited.
Good, good. That's awesome. You know, it was years ago. You'll probably enjoy this little tidbit of useless knowledge I carry around in my head, but it was years ago I read there was some sort of national poll or whatever it was, some sort of study that they'd done where it was basically a list of fears. And the number one fear across the nation at the time of the polling was public speaking. And dying was somewhere like not even in the top 10. It was like number 18 or something crazy like that. And I couldn't help but laugh when I read this, thinking people would rather be laying in the box than reading the eulogy.
Totally attest to that, because that totally me. I would have rather been the one that was getting talked about.
Yeah, right. And I think to some extent we all go through that at the beginning of these careers, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, just getting into it and trying to pave your own way and make it where it's, you know, fun for your students and clients and everything like that, and also, you know, meeting people along the way and not feeling you're you know, under pressure all the time. You know, mm-hmm. that is big deal, and I think, you know, for anybody even, you know, considering going into horses and into the clinician side of things, learning those things are going to be a really, you know, the quicker you learn them, the better off you'll be. You know, you'll put a lot less pressure on yourself because, like I said, you know, everybody in their own way is a trainer.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody can help with something. You know, everybody can teach somebody.
Right.
So that's a big, big part. And, you know, and the exciting part, you know, because it's not mystical and magical what we do. It's just like what everybody else does. You just time and practice, you know, those are the two big key things.
Yep.
To do it, you know, to go through it, and you have to really put in the time to you know, get the results. You know, it's not something you pop in the microwave and it's done.
Right, exactly.
That would be
right
a lot of times, but it just takes a lot more time.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. More time often than anybody ever anticipates. So,
absolutely.
So, I'm afraid we could probably talk all night long about stuff like this.
And I think we should come down here and we'll do a live together.
There you go. And that one will go all night long, right? I think Facebook cuts off at 4 hours, you know, so we could at least chat for 4 hours. And that's true. Yeah, we could stop it and start back over again. That's true. That's a good idea. That's it, right? Right? A couple six packs, a couple bottles of wine, and we'll be good to go. We'll be answering all sorts of questions online.
Super fun at the end of the night.
Right. Oh, goodness. So let's see. So I've got some wrap-up questions, and I'm going to toss these to both of you that you can each kind of give your own answer, and I'm really curious to hear how this is going to go with each of you giving. That's going to be pretty fun. So you guys can flip a coin if you like. for whoever's going to take the question first. But this first in the wrap-up questions here, if there was one specific thing that you would recommend for riders to focus on as a primary means of improving their horsemanship, what would it be? Who's going to tackle first?
Julia. Yeah, that's a great question.
Thanks.
Did you write these down earlier?
This one is. This one is everything else. So for anybody who's listening, it's and if you've listened to a few of these broadcasts, you know we usually just fly off the cuff. But then the wrap-up questions that we have are, those are set.
Okay.
So one thing that somebody should focus on. The most,
yep.
Right?
Yep, one specific thing to focus on as a primary means of improving their horsemanship.
I think Michael said it earlier, and it's don't take your personal growth with your horse and your horsemanship personal. And I think that's, I was going to say, I think I just put Michael's. We see that happen so many times as far as somebody comes into a clinic and they're right at that breaking point. And one of the best ways to put it is John and Josh have taught us the five learning course. And it goes from good, bad, work, better, learn. And so in that, of course, you have your bad and your worst stage. So we have these riders that come through and they hit these bad and worse stages where they think their horse is learning, but then they start getting worse before they get better and they really learn it. And as soon as they hit the bad and worse stages, the rider immediately jumps to, I'm not good enough, I'm doing something wrong, help, this isn't working, all of these things going on. And what they don't realize is what we talked about earlier, is they didn't do it. All they did is they were there. They just sit in the boat enough time to get the horse to finally learn it.
Right.
Because they have to go through that process of elimination of figuring out, did you really want the hip to move, or did you want my tail and this to move and this and that? They've got to go through all these things. And so I think not taking your training personal is huge, and just keep going and keep putting the time into it and seeing where it can take you, because then you hit the break point and you're like, oh, you're there. But so many times we see these riders that go through that are really, they've been working, they're just about there, and they give up right before they're getting ready to hit that over the top spot, but they just didn't devote enough time to be able to get.
Uh-oh.
Oh, are you there?
Are you there? Yeah. Okay. I was panicking there for a moment. I thought I might have lost you guys.
And I think to add a little bit more to Julia's, and then to give you another one from me, is as well as not taking it personally, don't ride yesterday's horse. You know, You know, don't put your horse that, you know, like I said earlier, your horse is gonna have a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they throw a temper tantrum or they, you know, they're not as soft as you'd like them to be that day, don't worry, because, you know, the nice thing about horse training is you just got to smile, because it's going to get worse. And once it's that bad, then you got to smile, because it's going to get better. So it's, you know, the only constant in there is smile, you know, enjoy
right.
your. And then from me.
I love that, by the way, that little quote there, don't ride yesterday's horse. Anybody who's watching the video here probably saw me just write that down. I love that. Don't ride yesterday's horse.
And then another one would be don't be afraid to try new things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it be something that you saw somebody do down the road, don't be afraid to try, because you can always go back to what you have. You can't forget or unlearn anything. You can improve something, but you can't unlearn what you used to do.
Right.
So being able to try and have the confidence that nothing is so broken that it can't be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big part. That's actually what keeps us on our toes. I mean, I'm sure you would agree, Patrick.
For sure.
It actually makes it more fun for us is when somebody's tried something and, you know, there was a great idea, but we can tweak one or two little things and put them back on a right path. And And their idea is a phenomenal one. And that may be something that actually teaches and inspires us to try something new. So I think that's a really, really big, important piece.
Absolutely. It's so easy for a rider to think that they've maybe failed in a moment because they got something that wasn't quite right. But, you know, something I'm always telling riders is it's not a failure, it's an experience.
Exactly.
And you build off of those experiences.
Exactly. I always go to the Thomas Jefferson one when he built the light bulb and he failed, you know, over 2,000 times. And he said, I didn't fail 2,000 times. I figured out 2,000 ways that didn't work.
Exactly.
So that, you know, that itself is what builds, you know, makes you grow and makes you push yourself outside of your comfort zone. And I think that's a huge bonus to be able to really push your training and to push yourself in your own growth and really test the waters in new places, you know, do that kind of stuff.
Right. For sure. For sure. And I'm going to bring back that quote because I love it. I'm just going to say it again. Don't ride yesterday's horse. I'm totally going to use that. And I'm going to give it the little TM Michael Lyons horsemanship.
You all the time. I'm like, hey, this is from one of my really good friends, Patrick King. Here you go.
There we go. Right. That's awesome.
All the time.
I love it. I love it. See, and that's why we do these conversations like this, just so we've got new material to talk to our students about.
And like you said, we don't get stale because we can steal each other's stuff.
That's it, right? We don't get stale. We just recycle. Oh, goodness. Okay, so again, tossed out here. Either one of you can take this one first. If you could ride with anyone, past or present, who would it be and why?
Shoot.
Nobody's jumping up to take it first.
I know. I think we should have gotten these questions.
Yeah.
No way. No way. These are off the cuff. First person that comes to your mind. How's that?
For me, I don't know. I have like a long, long, long list of guys that I'd really like to just sit with and pick their brains.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be like Al Dunning, Andrea Fapani, you know, those guys. Gosh, yeah, you're really making this difficult for me. just because, I mean, I'd like to meet with somebody in the performance horse world, you know, whether it be dressage or any of the upper level, like even Olympian riders, you know, anybody like that. What is their thought on the actual training side? Like, how much time do they devote to actually, you know, do they just eat, sleep, and breathe the training, or do they balance it out? Because like, I know a lot of times I think you and I agree a lot on, you know, with our horses that we take out and we push in the show pen and in the arena all the time. It's so nice to be able to take that same horse out on the trail ride to build a more all around horse. And it's a great way to kind of escape the monotony of the arena work.
Mm-hmm.
And just to kind of figure out what they think of the horse that way. You know, really kind of get an idea of where do they see the horse coming from and what, you know, what do they see when they look at the horse? You know, is it the same thing that I see or is it totally different? And it's more of, you know, an athlete where it's like, this is all you do. Don't think about anything else. Let's go and ride. Or is there a balance or is there something like that in there that, would help me improve my training.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that would be a conversation that we would have to catch on a live broadcast like this, wouldn't it? That would be.
I'll definitely plug you in.
Yeah, when you get that coordinated, you make sure you get that recorded because that would be great.
I'll send it to you. I'll just have to bring you with me.
Perfect. That'd be perfect. That's it. That'll be the way to do it. Awesome. Awesome. I love that. So, Julia, if you could ride with anyone, past or present, who would it be and why?
So, I'm really struggling with the question, but the thing that comes back, and I'm kind of going to put a twist on it, because of a recent study that I did, so we're developing, or trying to develop a couple of different online programs, and as a part of one of them, I did this study trying to figure out when horsemanship started. Like, when did people start realizing that there was a little bit more to these horses as far as teaching, rather than, you know, that we just, you know, feed them into it, force them into it, whatever you want to call it. And in one of the studies that I was doing, like I said, this is, I know it's kind of out there, one of the studies that I was doing was about overseas, and I don't have my notes in front of me, but it was from several hundreds of years back. It was talking about these guys over on record that had started basically doing what we see as horsemanship. They had started figuring out different ways of working with the horse and not, you know, using the whips to beat him into it and using force to do it. And it was back in the time where they were seen as, it was literally seen as a form of like witchcraft or that of the dead. And because these people were doing all these things with horses and they were riding tackless and they were riding with bits, you know, without bits, you know, overseas and in these countries when horses were there several hundreds of years ago. And it literally, like, people died because they thought that this was, like, something of the devil.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just a thing that they knew. So to go back almost more of that time period and, like, who was it that decided that this was a better way and that there was, you know, there was a different thing. So we went through another time period, you know, when we came to the United States and they were just workhorses. And so we kind of lapsed again over it. These European countries, they had done a little bit more, and several other countries they had started. But then we came to the United States, and everybody just saw them as a workhorse. So we went through another couple of decades of, you know, strictly just workhorse. And then it came into like the 70s and 80s, you know, when John and all these other people started coming up and realizing that, hey, you know, we, first of all, the truck and vehicle had been built, so we no longer needed them to plow our fields. They became more of a passion for us, and we started riding. So I think it would be really cool to go way back in time and ride with the people who first started seeing that there was a better way.
That would be very cool. I like that.
Good one.
Yeah, that. Well, you know, she did have a lot of time to think while you and I were chatting. So, you know, yeah, we gave her that time. maybe we should make her answer first for this next one then. This next question, what is your present personal definition of horsemanship?
Lord.
I feel like I'm on a game show.
Johnny, tell them what they've won.
I was going to say, I feel like $100,000.
Well, I guess that depends on who's listening, you know.
I would say the current definition of horsemanship is trying to communicate. Actually, it's kind of stealing one of Michael's quotes.
We have a quote
that's in our house that says, you know, the definition of horsemanship is trying to learn to communicate through the horse without using words, because obviously words is part of it. So I think just trying to learn the way of which the horse learned, the best way to utilize that. But yeah, that one's hard. Well, Michael, I'm hoping you have something better since
he's had a chance to listen to yours.
Okay, so I'm gonna try to get really philosophical real on you real quick.
So
the definition to me for horsemanship is the pursuit of knowledge. How's that one feel so far? Is it okay?
I like it. I like so far. So does that mean there's more to it?
Yeah, a little bit. So my brain ain't working that hard right now, but it's on overdrive. But really bettering, you know, the system and the philosophy of training the horses to get the amount of utilization of all the foods and as well as the maneuvers, you know, make the maneuvers as flawless as you can with minimal effort for both horse and rider. You know, I think if we have equally balanced horses and confident horses in the maneuvers that we all rider, I think our horsemanship is really going to start to improve a lot. So I think the pursuit of knowledge in horsemanship right now is really what everybody's all about, because you see a lot more different ways of training nowadays than you did even probably 10, 20 years ago.
Right.
Everybody's doing something a little bit different. So I think that's a huge part for right now, is everybody is trying something new, which is so exciting. For me as a clinician, and I'm sure Julia too, you as well, is people are actually out there trying new things and trying to pave new ways. You know, we got a lot more trailblazers right now than I feel like we've had in a little while.
Right, exactly.
So I think that's probably the most exciting part right now.
I agree. That's fantastic. All right, so now I got an easy question. Don't get too excited, because it's just a segue. So, easy question. How can folks find you? How can they find more information about Michael Lyons horsemanship? How can they find out about your clinic schedule, where you are, what you're going to be doing?
That I'm going to give to Julia. She's probably the better answer.
There we go. You're going to turn it over to the boss on that one.
Absolutely. I'm playing this one safe.
The easy one to the website, michaellyonshorsemanship.com. Although I will say we're probably better at keeping our Facebook up to date as far as everything eventually gets to the website. It just typically on Facebook gets there first.
Here we go.
So our Facebook page, Michael Lyons Horsemanship, is definitely a really good way to where we announce a lot of different things that we're working on right now. And then our website is up to date on clinics and will soon be up to date on our 2018 schedule.
Perfect. Perfect. And you guys have got an Instagram account going also, correct?
Yes, we do.
What?
I need somebody that just Instagrams for me. Instagrams a little, for whatever reason, because right now I do all the office work as well as, you know, work around the garden and whatever. And I tend to be consistently very focused on Facebook, but I go on Wave on Instagram.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. So primarily, if folks want to get in touch with you, the best way for them is going to be through Facebook, by looking up your page, Michael Lyons Horsemanship. I love it. Good. And I will definitely share the link to that in the notes here. We'll be posting in the comment section below this video. And if you're listening to this eventually through YouTube or through iTunes, we're going to post the link there also. So now the last question. If you guys have seen any of the videos that I've done, you've probably seen almost all of my videos, and all of these audio broadcasts end with a question of the day. And basically what that is I just ask any question that pops into my head. It doesn't really matter what it is. And anytime, and now we just got to play it safe, that's all. Anytime I have guests on, the guests get to ask the question of the day. And I'm super stoked that we're going to have two questions of the day, because we've got both of you here. So, Michael, shoot it to us quick. What's the question of the day?
Me?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, my goodness. Man, see, you got to prepare me for this.
No way. Not this one. It's the on the spot that makes it the most fun for this one.
A question for you or for me?
No, for the audience. The audience gets to answer the question, but you get to ask it.
Oh, okay. What's something that they would like to see from clinicians? You know, what would get them inspired to, what inspires them to do more? What would they like their clinicians to do to help them be inspired? Is it to either show them that they can do it, or is it through the teaching, or what is it? You know, where is where is it that the inspiration comes from?
I love it. That's an awesome question.
I'm turning this sucker around on these.
All right, Julia, what's your question of the day?
I always just kind of just a personal thing as far as what I've always intrigued what it is that got us into horses. So like I know, like I talked about earlier with me, why I got into horses as a 4-year-old, I took off with an afternoon and just sell ever since. And so I find that with these people that devote so much time, so much money, so much effort in, like, what is it that started you into horses, and what is it that keeps you in them? Like, what kind of keeps you involved, and why did you get there?
I love that. A double whammy of a question. What got you started with horses, and what's your inspiration to keep involved? I love it. All right, gang, those are our questions of the day. I know Michael and Julia are going to be checking in, as will I, to see your answers for the question of the day. So post them for us in the comments section below the video there. I love it. Awesome, awesome. Thank you so much, Michael and Julia, for joining me for this broadcast. This has been a ton of fun. I might have to consider doing multi-person broadcasts like this again in the future. That was a lot of fun.
Trailblazing.
There you go, right? Trailblazing. That's it. That's it. You're onto something there, I think.
But I'm telling you, I think we got to do the three of us when you come down.
That'll be so much fun. I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to that. And we will definitely have to keep folks posted or keep folks updated on that, because that is going to be a blast for sure.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it, buddy.
Awesome, awesome. You guys hang on the line here for me for just another couple minutes. And gang, I want to thank you for tuning in for episode number 15 of Talking About Horses. I really, really appreciate you giving Michael, Julia, and I your ear for this time. Please remember, if you've missed any of this broadcast, you can access it in its entirety here through Facebook, also soon through YouTube, or by streaming directly from iTunes. Through whatever outlet you're listening, please be sure to give us a rating, a comment, a review, and a share. Your word of mouth is the fuel for this fire. Tune in next week for Talking About Horses, when I'll be joined by my longtime friend, Richard Winters. Thanks again, gang, for tuning in.